Hello there and welcome. Today's Thursday, December the 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, another major Hollywood loss one day after her daughter dies. A fiery final speech as Secretary of State John Kerry gives an impassioned plea for the Middle East.
The two-state solution is now in serious jeopardy.
But it stirred up a continuing war of words with the Israeli Prime Minister. A look back at President Obama's defining moments, and also ahead, the year in four words is the talk of Twitter. It's all on today's International Edition.
Just singing in the rain, what a glorious feeling I'm having.
Well, more sad news to report today. Actress Debbie Reynolds, the star of the 1952 classic Singing in the Rain, and the mother of Carrie Fisher, has died. Reynolds was taken to the hospital after suffering a medical emergency in Los Angeles one day after her daughter died. Los Angeles Times and celebrity website TMZ, which was first to report the incident, said unnamed sources told them that the 84-year-old Reynolds was hospitalized after paramedics were called to her son's home. Reynolds and daughter Carrie, who struggled with addiction and depression, had recently sat down for an interview with Oprah Winfrey, and both spoke of their admiration for one another.
The funniest thing is my mother goes on the road and works. She gets up and puts her face on and her hair on, and she's alive at a time in her life when a lot of people are getting ready not to be. My mother is bigger than ever. I believe my mother knows now, but if she doesn't, it would be good if she did, that I take her advice, that I follow her example, that I respect who she is, and am glad that if I'm like her in any way, I'm very, very happy that I am.
I would say that Carrie and I have finally found happiness. I admire her strength in survival. I admire that she is alive, that she has chosen to make it. It would have been easy to give up and to give in and to keep doing drugs. I always feel, as a mother does, that I protect her. Who will do that when I'm gone? I want happiness for my daughter. I want Carrie to be happy, and I can't have that. So that makes me sad.
Reynolds had two children with the late crooner Eddie Fisher, who left her for Elizabeth Taylor. Carrie Fisher, who starred as Princess Leia in the original Star Wars trilogy, died Tuesday at the age of 60. Now, Reynolds and Fisher appear together in a documentary that premiered at the Cannes Film Festival earlier this year. Bright Lights, starring Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, is also set to air on HBO in early 2017.
Cottonwoods whispering above, Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love.
Reynolds was nominated for an Oscar for her role in the musical The Unsinkable Molly Brown, and also known for her iconic role in the film Tammy and the Bachelor. Actress Debbie Reynolds was 84. Well, turning now to what's been trending on social media, and as you can imagine, and this is the topic of the day, we're joined by VOA's David Byrd. David, we don't normally get so serious with our social media segments, but with this late breaking news about actress Debbie Reynolds dying one day after her daughter, it's just so tragic, and of course, that's what everybody's talking about.
Well, this is like a nightmare version of Groundhog Day, because you and I were in here yesterday talking about Debbie Reynolds' daughter, Carrie Fisher, who had died after suffering a heart attack on a plane flight from London to L.A. Then today we get the news that Debbie Reynolds was taken to an L.A. hospital. Early reports said she had suffered a stroke while she was planning Carrie's funeral with her son, Todd.
It's so tragic.
It's you know,
this
it's
poor family.
Another of a long stream, including David Bowie and
right.
Prince and all these celebrities.
And we haven't. I mean, we literally haven't even recovered from the loss of George Michael. I
right.
Mean, this just
George
happened
Michael
a couple
on Christmas
of days ago.
Day. Yeah, and you know, this is obviously on social media, on Twitter. This is a topic that is burning up on Twitter mm-hmm. and on Facebook. Debbie Reynolds, known mostly for her breakout performance in Singing in the Rain, classic musical with Donald O'Connor and Gene Kelly. You know, they did that wonderful, you know, Good Morning number, mm-hmm, and Debbie Reynolds mm-hmm, was 19. Mm-hmm. She also was nominated for an Oscar for The Unsinkable Molly Brown.
A
slew of
beautiful
movies.
Beautiful woman, a talented woman, a gracious woman.
And, you know, of course, on social media, a lot of people have responded. Carolyn Ray, the comedian, said, "No, this is all too heartbreaking. Meeting Debbie Reynolds was one of the highlights of my life. Carrie Fisher was a goddess of comedy." Dan Rather, the newsman from CBS News, said, "Such sad news to report, but word has come that Debbie Reynolds has died. Her son's statement said, she's with Carrie." Stephen Stanton says, hashtag heartbreaking. Debbie Reynolds, Singing in the Rain star, and Carrie Fisher's mother dies at 84. Dane Cook at Dane Cook just says, "Damn, RIP Debbie Reynolds, legendary entertainer. I'm sure she's brokenhearted by the loss of her daughter." And Rory O'Malley, who plays King George in the musical Hamilton on Broadway, says, "My God, absolutely devastating. Love and light to their family. Debbie Reynolds was an icon. May mother and daughter rest in peace."
They were apparently very, very close. I can't even imagine what it must have been like for a mother to have to be planning the funeral of your daughter,
and it was a complicated relationship, though, because the Carrie Fisher's novel / memoir, Postcards
right.
from the Edge,
mm-hmm.
was based on her relationship
right.
with her mother,
right.
and that movie that was made into a movie starring Meryl Streep that won a bunch of awards and was very highly acclaimed. As I mentioned, this is just the latest in a string of celebrity deaths. That included people like Prince and Merle Haggard and,
David Bowie
and, Leonard Cohen and a whole bunch. And this actually, it set off. We're at that time of year where you're looking back on the year. And there was a hashtag that was trending earlier in the day called hashtag 2016 in 4 words.
Hmm.
And some of the things that came related to that, we're talking about some of those earlier
right.
people. Mr. Biffenstein, tried to make light of it. He said, "Look, another dead celebrity." But Allison Page, Miss Allie P. Neely, said, "Death has his way." Elephant in the Room said, "Killed my childhood idols."
Yeah.
So, that also was a trending topic for most of the day. On not just the celebrity deaths, but also on politics, like the election here in the United States,
right.
on sports.
A lot of people just didn't feel real good about this past year.
A lot
year.
Of people, there were a lot of people that, there was one that Audra Mitchell, which is an account at Audra L. Mitchell, "When will it end?" And then the Mary Mom at the Multi Mom, "Please take it back." Tom's at TZN Egg said, "A slow mental earthquake." So these were some of the responses for 2016
yeah.
in 4 words.
A lot of people just really ready for this year to be over, and they don't have much longer to wait.
I hope it gets over soon. We have had, it's almost like the beginning of A Tale of Two Cities, the best of times and the worst of times. But that's what's trending on social media right now.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You can also follow David on Twitter at David_DByrd, B-Y-R-D. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Billionaires and generals predominate in Trump's proposed cabinet. Pakistan opens new nuclear plant built with China's help. An attack against police in Kenya highlights the rising threat of female extremism. And a strong heart and better education are shown to lower dementia risk. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. While tensions between the United States and Israel continue, the heightened upheaval erupting last week when the U.S., in a departure from past policy, decided to abstain rather than veto a U.N. Security Council resolution calling settlements in the West Bank a violation of international law. On Wednesday, Secretary of State John Kerry gave an impassioned speech about the settlement building.
The two-state solution is the only way to achieve a just and lasting peace between Israelis and Palestinians. It is the only way to ensure Israel's future as a Jewish and democratic state.
Well, Kerry said a two-state solution is the only way to ensure both the Israelis and Palestinians will be able to live side by side in peace. Israel, though, was incensed by the speech, and on Wednesday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed Israel has absolute indispensable evidence the U.S. actually spearheaded the resolution.
The truth is that trends on the ground, violence, terrorism, incitement, settlement expansion, and the seemingly endless occupation, they are combining to destroy hopes for peace on both sides and increasingly cementing an irreversible one-state reality that most people do not actually want.
And in response to Secretary of State John Kerry's speech, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pushed back in a hastily arranged television statement on Israeli TV, accusing the Obama administration of a biased bid to blame Israel for failure to reach a peace deal.
Israelis do not need to be lectured about the importance of peace by foreign leaders. Israel's hand has been extended in peace to its neighbors from day one, from its very first day. We've prayed for peace. We've worked for it every day since then.
He also said Kerry didn't get to the core reason why the conflict continues.
The persistent Palestinian refusal to recognize a Jewish state remains the core of the conflict, and its removal is the key to peace. Palestinian rejection of Israel and support for terror are what the nations of the world should focus on if they truly want to advance peace. And I can only express my regret and say that it's a shame that Secretary Kerry does not see this simple truth.
While Israel's Arab population has citizens' rights, the roughly 2.5 million Palestinians living in the occupied West Bank do not. Saeb Erekat, Secretary General of the Palestinian Nation, also weighed in on this whole discussion.
Mr. Netanyahu knows very well that he has the choice, settlements or peace. He can't have both. Settlements are illegal under international law. Settlements are a flagrant violation to international law. Settlements are the antidote for the two-state solution. So we really urge the Israeli government to take the high ground and declare a full cessation of settlement activities as specified in the resolution, including East Jerusalem, so we can give the peace process the chance it deserves by the resumption of meaningful negotiations.
Well, the U.S. and the Palestinians and most of the world oppose Israeli settlement construction in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, territories captured by Israel in 1967 and claimed by the Palestinians for their independent state. But Israel's government argues previous construction freezes failed to advance a peace deal and that the future of the settlements, now home to 600,000 Israelis, must be resolved in direct talks between Israelis and Palestinians. International Edition's Sarah Williams talked about this with VOA reporter Bill Gallo on why Secretary Kerry would have made such a strong speech at the end of his time in office.
Yeah, there's only a month left. It is kind of confusing to a lot of people. But one thought is that he's trying to preserve his own and Barack Obama's legacy, setting the parameters for a future peace deal, a two-state solution. But another idea is that Kerry is actually concerned that the two-state solution won't actually be viable for very much longer. And so he's using very harsh language to sort of warn of that reality.
Yeah, I mean, looking forward, could this, you know, some of the opinions that Kerry is using at this point, I mean, could this further, you know, could this strain relations with Israel, you know, getting into the next administration?
Right. And you know, a lot of people have warned of that, saying that Donald Trump now will be more likely to even take a more hawkish view on Israel, to stick up for Israel even more than he already seemed like he was going to. And so that could, yes, in a way, possibly make a two-state solution even more unlikely. At least that's what a lot of analysts are saying.
What has President-elect Donald Trump said about this issue?
Well, he has been a little bit mixed on that. About a year ago, he said that he wanted to push really hard for a two-state solution, saying he would be even-handed. That created a lot of controversy. Since then, he has moved further towards Israel's corner, promising to be a unwavering ally, being very critical of Obama's recent diplomatic moves. So, I mean, it's really unclear. Anything that Donald Trump does, it seems unclear at this point, but it seems he's going to be much more pro-Israel than what Obama has been.
That's VOA reporter Bill Gallo. This is VOA's International Edition.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Barack Obama is wrapping up his time in office as America's 44th president. The 47-year-old man who was swept into office promising hope and change leaves the White House 8 years later with one of the highest approval ratings of any president in modern history, hovering around 59%. But Obama also leaves after his choice for a successor, Hillary Clinton, suffered a stunning defeat to Republican Donald Trump, who has promised to undo many of Obama's core policies. White House correspondent Cindy Sain takes a look at some of the defining moments that shaped Barack Obama as a leader and as a person.
The image of the first African-American ever elected U.S. president, holding hands with his wife and two young daughters, may have forever altered Americans' perceptions about who can win the White House.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Americans give Obama high marks for parenting, even those who disagree with some of his policies.
Perhaps more than any president, he has integrated his family life with his leadership of the country. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Early on, Obama focused on bringing to justice Osama bin Laden, the al-Qaeda leader who had eluded former President George W. Bush. Late in the evening of Sunday, May 2, 2011, Obama addressed the American people.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children.
But that big victory was soon followed by the start of the deadly civil war in Syria. And on August 21, 2012, Obama issued a warning to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad that came back to haunt the U.S. leader.
We cannot have a situation where chemical or biological weapons are falling into the hands of the wrong people. We have been very clear to the Assad regime, but also to other players on the ground, that a red line for us is we start seeing a whole bunch of chemical weapons moving around or being utilized.
One year later, observers say Assad's army killed more than 1,000 people with sarin gas. Contrary to expectations, the U.S. did not respond with force. Syrian researcher Haid Haid said it was then the hopes of many Syrians were dashed.
What's happening in Syria is just another battle in the biggest fight there.
Domestically, following racial incidents, President Obama spoke out about the state of race relations in America. The massacre of 9 African Americans at a church Bible study group in June 2015 led the president to reflect about the grace shown by the victims' families who had forgiven the gunman.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound.
On the world stage, Obama departed from past policy to create historic openings with Burma and Cuba. In Havana, he reached out directly to the Cuban people.
Because in many ways, the United States and Cuba are like two brothers who've been estranged for many years, even as we share the same blood.
The president seemed to relish the chance to interact with young people, like this group in Vietnam. Obama said although his time as president is coming to an end, the worldwide network he launched to encourage leadership among young people is just beginning. Cindy Sain, VOA News, The White House.
Well, as we've been talking about the many losses in Hollywood, the world did lose some famous names this year, from a dictator standoffish with the United States to the oldest person ever in space. VOA's Arash Arabasadi takes a look back with this brief chronological look at those and several others who died in 2016 and how people around the world remembered them.
Pop music icon and celebrity David Bowie died of cancer in January at 69. He was remembered around the world and above it. A tribute by Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield singing Bowie's Space Oddity departing from the International Space Station. Justice Antonin Scalia of the United States Supreme Court died in February. Appointed by President Ronald Reagan in 1986, Scalia was a conservative justice who interpreted the Constitution as it was understood at the time of its adoption. Also in February, Boutros Boutros-Ghali died. He was the 6th Secretary General of the United Nations, and he was both the first African and first Arab to hold that office. Former First Lady Nancy Reagan died in March at the age of 94. Mrs. Reagan was an actor like her husband, and she championed the anti-drug Just Say No campaign. Pop superstar Prince, widely called one of the most talented musicians on earth, died in April of a drug overdose at 57. Many mourned his death by celebrating his music. Legendary boxer Muhammad Ali died in June from respiratory problems after a long battle with Parkinson's disease. Ali was a civil rights hero who changed his name from Cassius Clay when he converted to Islam. The U.S. government jailed Ali for his refusal to fight in the Vietnam War. Holocaust survivor and Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel died at 87 in July. He was a professor who authored nearly 60 books and helped establish the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington. Former Israeli President Shimon Peres died of a stroke in July. Peres, Yitzhak Rabin, and Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994 for Arab-Israeli peace talks that led to the signing of the Oslo Accords. Communist Cuban leader Fidel Castro died in November. Known for his cigars and military dress, Castro was a polarizing figure, admired for snubbing Western capitalism, but criticized for human rights abuses and impoverishing Cuba's economy. John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth, died in December at the age of 95. He served four terms as a U.S. Senator from his home state of Ohio. In 1998, at 77, he became the oldest human in space.
I guess I'm older.
On Christmas Day, 80s music icon George Michael died at the age of 53. He rose to stardom, co-founding the pop duo Wham!, but Michael quietly donated millions to children, cancer victims, and those living with AIDS. And on December 27th, screenwriter, actress, and Star Wars royalty Carrie Fisher died. Fisher most famously played Princess Leia in the original trilogy. She'd recently suffered a heart attack on a flight from London to Los Angeles. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And of course, we also just today lost Debbie Reynolds. We'll leave you with more of her music. She died today at the age of 84, one day after the death of her daughter, Carrie Fisher.
Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show. Find us anytime at voanews.com. And thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Nelson Lopez. I'm Lori London in Washington.
I knew if he knew what I'm dreaming of. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Throughout this holiday season, the United States government is profiling the cases of prisoners unjustly held around the world and the families they leave behind. The campaign is sponsored by U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, and is known as #FreeToBeHome Political Prisoner Campaign. The stories of these individuals highlight the broader struggle faced by so many families of political prisoners who have to commemorate countless family occasions with loved ones behind bars. One such individual is Ukrainian film director Oleg Sentsov, who was arrested in Crimea in 2014, shortly after Russia's occupation of the peninsula, in retaliation for his vocal opposition to the occupation. In 2015, a Russian court convicted him and a fellow activist, Alexander Kolchenko, of plotting terrorist attacks in Crimea in a trial that Amnesty International described as redolent of Stalinist-era show trials. Heather McGill, a researcher at Amnesty International, went on to say, "This trial was fatally flawed and credible allegations of torture and other ill treatment have been ignored by the court." Sentsov was given a 20-year sentence and is incarcerated in a penal colony in the Siberian region of Yakutia, about 3,500 miles from Ukraine's capital, Kiev. He has not seen his two young children or wife since. His co-defendant, Kolchenko, received a 10-year sentence. At least 10 Ukrainians are serving long jail sentences in Russia following dubious trials. Others are in captivity in separatist-run eastern Ukraine or in occupied Crimea. In a letter from Sentsov, smuggled out of prison in September, he wrote, "There are many of us held in Russia, and even more in Donbass. Some have been freed, others hope and wait." Sentsov was detained for exercising his universal rights. He represents thousands of other prisoners unjustly detained around the world. The United States, said Ambassador Power, calls on all governments, including Russia, to release their political prisoners. Political prisoners should be free to believe. They should be free to be loved. They should be free to be home.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
is for, what's the universe?